Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. We appreciate that. Al is in the bubble somewhere. In a bubble. Al is bubbled. That's all I know. But thank you, Al. We appreciate your intro today. And don't burst your bubble, etc. So here we are. I'm here to introduce a great interview that we have for you today with Iron Mike Irons, who is interviewing Paul Gallant, the co-host of the Danny and Gallant show on 710 ESPN in Seattle. We've had Danny on before, very knowledgeable and wise football analyst and commentator and reporter. And we have today Paul Gallant, who has worked with Danny out in Seattle for some time. And Paul is an interesting guest because, like Mike, he grew up in Massachusetts. And now Mike's doing this alone. First time we've heard, I think, solo Mike interview. I think. Did we do that once before? I don't remember. I don't have Mike here with me to answer that. I'm just throwing to this interview and giving everybody a brief sort of update on what's going on. I know I haven't been very visible on Twitter, and we haven't done a show in a while. But just a lot going on, a lot of childcare and work stuff, and let's get through until some things settle down a little bit, and then I'll have some attention for the Patriots. And so for now, I'm going to be hoping to get back as soon as possible, but I really want you to enjoy and get ready for what hopefully will be another classic game between the Patriots and the Seahawks. And I can't think of a better way to do that than a couple of local guys having a good talk about Boston and their history with these two football teams. So enjoy it, please.
Paul, welcome to Entitled Town.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. It's great to actually be talking to people from the part of the country I grew up in.
Well, you're a good liar, but thank you. I'm pretty excited for the game Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, these games have always been great. And when I was working in Houston, I remember vividly doing CBS Sports Radio at the same time as the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl and trying, as I watched the game while doing a talk show with my co-host Mike Meltzer, trying not to lose my mind, especially when Jermaine Kearse made that ridiculous catch. The game after that, awesome, where Gronk sort of got pass interfered with.
A little bit. Let's just say that he was assaulted in the end zone by Cam Chancellor on the Sunday night game.
That's what John Harris would say.
A typical disgusting display.
Oh, absolutely yellow.
The gutless way they do things there. But the Seahawks, Pete Carroll is 2-1 against Belichick. You know, the win in 2012, kind of the coming out party for the Hawks, the Legion of Boom on a national stage. The game we just mentioned at Foxborough. And as someone who, I watched the 97, 98, and 99 Patriots, I can't believe I'm asking you this question. Is Pete Carroll the second best coach in football?
Yeah, he is. It's weird, isn't it? Because I remember when I was still living in the area, hearing all of the things that I heard about Pete Carroll on the way out. Now, the first football game that I ever went to was the first game of the 1997 season against the Chargers. They killed him 41-7. And I remember everyone had these like repeat, I think they were towels that they were carrying around the stadium. And honestly, I thought that things were going to go great with him. And I think they started off well that year. Then they went through some down times. There was a ton of injuries in 97, but that 97 team was loaded. And the next year you're thinking to yourself, okay, things are going to go well. Bledsoe hurts his thumb. And the kid and me, I guess I had no idea that things were so toxic behind the scenes, that apparently Pete had this style that was so different from Bill Parcells that guys were sort of walking all over him. I don't know if you saw, there's this article that I think happened after the last game of the year where Chris Slade basically went into the Jets locker room, I think, and talked with Bill Parcells. And after the game, Chad Eaton was asked about Pete's style. And he said, I think something that if you heard it today, you wouldn't blink an eyelash at. But back then, he basically said something along the lines of, he trusted us to act like professionals. He didn't need to be on us. And some people took advantage. And then the next year they start 6-2 and they finish 8-8. And then he ends up out the door. And I remember when it happened, I was sort of surprised. I was a naive kid that did not really think much about all the drama that took place behind the scenes, even though I had seen Bill Parcells essentially quit before Super Bowl 31. And all of a sudden he goes to USC and you don't think you're ever going to see him at the NFL level again. Then all these shady things are happening. And then he goes to the Seahawks. But you know, if you think about it, well, who else is in the same conversation as Pete Carroll, as far Andy as like Reed. The second best coach? I would say Andy Reid, but then I think about all of the times that he has gone up against Belichick and Belichick has basically stuffed him in a locker. Right? I mean, starts off, I think, what was he, 0-3 when he was in Philadelphia? And things obviously in Kansas City have been a little bit different. But I for whatever reason, and maybe it's because of the Philadelphia side of my family, but there's something with me with Andy Reid where I can't quite put him there.
Well, if it's not Andy Reid, then it's got to be your buddy in Houston, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, absolutely not. And I like Bill O'Brien, by the way. I think he is a solid to good coach. I think he is an awful general manager.
Do you think he has pictures of the McNair family, somebody in the McNair family with Satan?
You know, that is the most fascinating aspect of the Houston Texans, is that Bill O'Brien somehow gets more and more power, and he has done nothing to really merit it. But whatever it is, it's something juicy. And I do know some juicy tidbits behind the scenes as far as how the actual breakup between O'Brien and Rick Smith, who was then general manager, happened, and how O'Brien got a lot more say. It was a mess because I remember actually like going back and forth with Bill the day before. I thought he might get fired. And then the next thing you know, it's Rick Smith who is resigning. Very messy situation there. But
very Michael Corleone-esque consolidating power by O'Brien.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know who ended up being Mo Green getting shot through the glasses, but that was something else.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, the poor guy. I think that year it was Tom Savage, and there was a game at the end of the year where Savage came in and he was like clearly concussed getting up, and O'Brien puts him back on the field, and everyone saw it on the replay. But O'Brien, there's no way he could have seen it because it took place in the end zone. But everyone obviously overreacts to seeing things like that, especially then, I think, when things were a little bit more sensitive when it comes to concussions. But honestly, this might be controversial. Don't we think that John Harbaugh's got to be up there? And I know that he's a whiny guy and he gets mad when Belichick kind of pantses him and figures out different rules that maybe he wasn't aware of. But the Ravens have played New England.
No one's ever seen that formation before.
Yeah, I know. Man, it was the worst. It's the worst thing to say after a loss. But Baltimore, I think, over the last like 20 years has played New England probably the toughest. And I mean, John Harbaugh was doing it with Joe Flacco, who's not good.
Jump ball Joe.
Yeah, yeah. I called it the moon ball offense. Just throw it straight up in the air and pray that there's a pass interference or that someone comes down with it. And it obviously worked in 2012. So I think Harbaugh's got a case. If we're talking last 20 years, do we throw Tom Coughlin into the conversation? Because there's something about, I think, what the coaches that do well against New England do that I think has to have them up towards the top. And obviously Pete being 2-1, that's definitely, I think, couple of feathers in his cap.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Here's someone else I want to talk about, because this praise of Pete Carroll, quite frankly, the jacked and pumped Pete Carroll, quite frankly, is making my stomach turn. So I want to turn to Russell Wilson. Bill Belichick's never going to take a steaming dunk, steaming dump, he tried to say in English, on a player on the other team the week of a game. He's not going to give any bulletin board material. He did say that, quote unquote, I don't see anybody as really better than this player with regards to Wilson. Russell Wilson's never received an MVP vote. That's absurd.
Nuts.
Is he the most underrated player in pro sports?
It's hard for me to say he's underrated because I feel like I've always properly rated, as I pat myself on the back right here. You know, when he played that game against New England in 2012, I remember watching that in the NRG Stadium press box. I did not hear Scott Zolak on the broadcast say that this guy isn't a quarterback, but I remembered watching the game.
I was there. I was at that game.
Oh, you were? God.
Yeah, I was at that game.
What a collapse, because they had the game in hand, it felt like, at halftime. And then in the second half, you watch Russell starting to do things that we have seen him do so many times before, these like figure eights behind the line of scrimmage and then throwing the ball deep downfield and throwing it with unbelievable accuracy.
The throw he made to Sidney Rice to win the game with just over 2 minutes to go was a professional throw.
Right. And I remember seeing that happening and I thought to myself, okay, this guy's pretty good. Now, I don't know if he's going to be able to keep it up over the long haul, but then the very next year he's in the Super Bowl. They're not asking him to do a whole lot, but I think there are a lot of parallels between Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. I think that at the beginning of their careers, they're both carried by these defenses that sort of overshadowed them. And there were other quarterbacks in the game that overshadowed them as well, like Peyton Manning. That shouldn't have happened. I think everyone in the northeastern region of the United States, whether it was the 24-14-4 interception performance or the 20-3 cut that meat game where I was sitting in, I think, section 318 leading on that chant that was making fun of, I think, was it Nationwide Insurance or something like that? Let's go, insurance adjusters, let's go. So for Russell, I feel like he is finally starting to get that credit. And I think the reason that Belichick likes him so much is the reason I like him so much. He doesn't make mistakes. And last year, I mean, what was it, 5 interceptions? There was a point during the season where he had won, I think, the first couple of games of the year before there started to happen. There started to be injuries at tight end and at running back. He's just so smart with the football. And I think that's why Belichick likes him. Now, I'm very curious if we were to sit Bill Belichick down and give him truth serum, how he would describe both Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson and comparing the two. But I think right now, wouldn't you agree that they're the number one and the number two quarterbacks in the game, and you can sort of take your pick as to who's number one?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Wilson is terrifying to root against. If you have a bet against him, whatever it is, I'm not going to bet against him anytime soon. I actually think the Seahawks have a chance to be the best team in football this year.
Really? Well, so I've got some doubts there, but I think that's just sort of growing up in the Northeast, and you sort of have these high expectations. There are certain things on the defensive side that I look at and I'm a little bit leery about for Seattle's perspective. I am not thrilled with the defensive line. I am not thrilled with the run defense after one game. We are only going off of one game, and we're not even going off of preseason, but I think last year they had issues stopping the run, and I feel like this might be a kind of crappy matchup for Seattle in terms of just the way that we saw New England play last week. I just watched that game for the first time yesterday. And I mean, Cam Newton, the numbers didn't really indicate that he's been throwing a lot, but I thought he was showing some impressive middle of the field accuracy downfield, and that arm strength was at the very least for this game there. I mean, the first pass of the game, he like basically just broadsides it off of Julian Edelman's chest. So I wonder about Seattle's defense a lot.
That was the only pass they threw over 15 air yards in that game.
Was that it?
They threw one pass over 15 yards, and I guess that I'm going to take a wild guess that won't be the case this week.
It could be though. I really want to see what McDaniels and what they have cooked up for Seattle in week 2, because I want to know if this is a team that's going to change its offense week to week like we've seen so many times in years past, and if they even are capable of doing it, because you know, with Cam, you do have some questions about whether or not he can throw the ball 25-30 times a game without his shoulder starting to act up, and if he can run the ball 15-16 times a game. And I know Belichick was sort of dismissing it this week, and that McDaniels was saying that, yeah, we can just keep on running the same thing. Things don't get predictable if they work.
Well, that's the Boston media phrase that pays this week. A hat tip to my Boston's best columnist, Pat Scartelli. The phrase that pays is this really sustainable?
Do you think it is?
I think they're smart and they know what they're doing. And I think that Newton ran the ball 15 times last week, 75 yards. I don't think he took a beating by any. The one thing that Wilson does absurdly well, and we used to do this, my buddies and I used to do this back in the day when Deion Branch was on the Patriots, his first go-round, if you ever took a shot every time Deion Branch got tackled, you'd be stone cold sober. And that's what Wilson does. Wilson never takes a beating. He gets down, he gets out of bounds, whatever it be. And that's what Newton needs to do.
You know, here's the thing though. Russ does leave himself open for shots. And there was a play against Atlanta this past week where he almost got decapitated because he held onto the football too long. And that's my concern for this year is I don't like that offensive line in front of him. I am not an offensive line expert. I'm not going to act like I know what the heck I'm talking about when it comes to studying those guys game to game. But I know that Russell Wilson typically gets sacked a lot. And while some of the sacks are his own fault because he holds onto the football long, and you're right, he does sometimes duck away from the pressure, especially when he's running downfield. He will get clobbered every now and then. And I'm curious as to if that's something that is going to end up biting him in the tuchus, seeing as he's been so durable over the course of his career. Maybe I'm just being like a just negative person with cynical thoughts, but and I need to knock on wood a little bit more. And
Rick Pitino was right about you people from Boston. All the negativity in this town sucks.
Yeah, he sucked. You know,
well, there's another joke there that I'm just not even willing to make.
Oh yeah, I know where you're going with that one. I don't think I'm allowed to anymore. Yeah. In days past, I might have been able to.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, your larger point is right. Like, these aren't the Legion of Boom Seahawks anymore. They did trade for Jamal Adams. They gave up over 500 yards of total offense to Atlanta last week. Most of it was passing yardage, and you know, watching the 2011 Patriots give up yardage.
Yeah, yeah, it buckets. Felt like to just keep everything.
Yardage is not points.
Right, and. Look, to the defense's credit, there was only one big play that was allowed, and it was when a guy who I think honestly should not be playing deep safety, Lano Hill, was on the field. And they put him on the field a little bit, so we'll see if that ends up costing them, because I think they're still trying to figure out like how many downs every single player in the secondary gets. They don't, at least in my opinion, and this could change on Sunday, there isn't a guy on that defense that I feel like is going to take the ball away for Seattle. I think
so. You're saying Bobby Wagner isn't Bobby Wagner anymore?
No, that's not the case. Because I mean in the secondary. Because and look, Jamal Adams is one of those guys who's just going to fly all over the field. I think he's a lot like Troy Polamalu in that regard. And I think that means that he can be taken advantage of from time to time. And honestly, Bobby Wagner probably played his best game in over a year against Atlanta, and he had a couple of deflected passes. But I mean the guys in the secondary, like the cornerbacks. Shaquille Griffin, he had a lot of deflected passes last year. Where were the interceptions? Zero. Quinton Dunbar, who has a lot of interceptions in Washington, he seems like he's trying to figure things out. And then after that, you have Trey Flowers, who they rotated in a little bit. And Trey Flowers had actually a pretty good start to last year. And then he played against Mike Evans, and Mike Evans ate him alive. And his confidence was never the same after that. So they have three cornerbacks that I feel like are good at keeping things in front of them. But they don't seem like guys that are going to take advantage of a close pass where they're in good coverage and get that interception. And I know that's not necessarily how defense works, but they just feel like they are more of a, we're not going to get beat deep secondary. And I think that that is a problem, but I don't know that it'll be a problem this week. The big problem this week, their run defense last week, when Atlanta wanted to run the football with Todd Gurley, who I don't think is Todd Gurley anymore, they got some serious yards up the middle. And I'm a little concerned about their ability to stop the run. They didn't really add anybody at defensive tackle this offseason. They only have three guys, Puna Ford, Brian Monet, and the guy that they re-signed this offseason, who I'm just not a big fan of, Jaron Reed. They gave him a bigger extension, a two-year extension. It's sort of a prove-it deal. He had 10 sacks 2 years ago. Last year, he didn't do much. They only have three guys on the interior. And if you do the amount of running that New England did last week, I think that trio in the middle is going to get exhausted. Because you saw last week that the Puna Ford, at the very least, he was gasping for air at times. So I think for Seattle this week, they're going to have to find some toughness up front that I don't think they really had to test at all last week.
Is Sony Michel the kind of back who's going to give them problems?
That's a good question. How do you feel about Sony Michel?
Because I think he runs really hard. I think he finishes his runs well, and I think he has to do a better job of – he has to be better at catching the football, because the one thing that – and Belichick has pointed this out, and it was one of the reasons they got rid of LeGarrette Blount. When Blount was on the field, they ran the ball. Mm-hmm. When Deion Lewis was on the field, they usually passed the ball. And it's kind of the same thing they have now with Michelle's the running back. White is the pass catching back, and he's and Burkhead's kind of, you know, a jack of all trades. He does both pretty well.
I like this kid out of Arizona they got too. I thought he flashed. I texted somebody who was an Arizona grad. I was like, hey, what's his name? Is JJ JJ something? I forget.
JJ Taylor.
Yeah, so I texted him and he's like, you know, best case scenario, Kevin Faulk. And I was like, oh, that sounds exciting. I liked him.
He's Deion Lewis. Side. He has the same skill set as Deion Lewis. He's small, he's shifty, he's quick.
Yeah. I don't know that Michelle is. I don't know what it is. I'll be perfectly honest.
He's kind of a cause celeb for this podcast. Dave and I think that he is. I mean, he was just immense. And they don't win the Super Bowl in 2018 without his ball security. N'Keal Harry, take note. Without his ball security and just his ability to finish runs in that 2018 postseason.
I can't argue against that. And I know that my opinion of Sony Michel is somewhat affected, and you're going to hate me for saying this, but the occasional listen to Velger and Maz definitely has affected my, it's a listen. I can't get enough of it. I'm sorry. I just enjoy the show, even though they are generally the most negative people that there are in the world when it comes to New England.
You mispronounced horrible people in the world, but
horrible.
That's okay.
Horrible, terrible. Yeah, look, I enjoy it.
That show sucks, Mike. It sucks.
It sucks, Mike. It sucks. It blows. Maz, it's just not there. Sorry, it's just not there. I'm sorry.
That impersonation's a little bit too spot on. So let's move on. All right. So I want to move on. We do a wrap up the podcast typically when we have an interview. We do a segment I've totally ripped off from David Faraday called
Everyone rips
Rapid
off
Fire. Everybody rips it off from David Faraday. Why wouldn't you? So I've got several rapid fire questions. I'm going to put 60 seconds on the non-existent clock.
All right,
are you
good,
ready, sir?
I ramble.
Okay. Number one, best Patriot team of the Belichick era.
I like the 2003 team better. The 2004 team was so banged up at the end of the year in the secondary. They had Corey Dillon. So I'm going to go 04.
Okay. Your favorite Patriots game of this run?
Let me think. It's a tie between the two games against the Colts. If I have to pick the one that I liked the most, I actually had a sense of dread going into the divisional round 20-3 victory over the Colts, and the snow started right before the game. The cut that meat chance in the crowd, Teddy Bruschi ripping the ball away from fellow McFellapants, the running back for the Colts. That's my favorite one, and being there in person for it too. It still gives me goosebumps thinking about it.
Gil Santos at the end of that game, listening to the radio, and it's on the DVD. He said, "How will the Patriots stop the high-powered Colts?" That's how. Good.
And then they have like Hank Poteet and Earthwind Moreland playing corner and maybe a little Troy Brown. Oh, so great. Especially after Bill Polian whines to the NFL. Oh, my receivers can't get a chance.
That was a great fucking win.
Yes. Oh, God. Next one. So satisfying.
Next one. Massachusetts question. North Shore or South Shore?
South Shore. I'm from the South Shore, though. I originally grew up in Hanover. My dad lived in Braintree for a bit. Most recently, I was working, before I got the job in Houston, I was working at a Quincy, Hannaford's in North Quincy. So I've pretty much exclusively been South Shore whenever I've lived in Massachusetts.
So, all right, Hannaford. So you were cutting that meat like you were Peyton.
No, I was a cashier at the front end. So basically, I just dealt with older Irish people and a lot of there's a heavy Korean population there, and a lot of them did not speak English.
Quincy's like become heavily Asian.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a conflict between the two sides from time to time. But I enjoyed that grocery store very much. Yeah, Hannaford's in North Quincy. Shout out.
All right. New England seafood or Seattle seafood?
You know what? I was such a picky eater when I lived in Massachusetts, so I didn't really get to fully experience the seafood of Boston. And the other thing that's terrible is, since I've moved here, I thought to myself, hey, once everything opens up after football season's done, and I'm gonna go have a time, I'm gonna go out to all the seafood places. So to be perfectly honest, I can't answer that question.
All right, pass. He uses his pass button. U.S. Open tennis or U.S. Open golf?
U.S. Open golf. I'm not a tennis guy.
Fair enough. Who has the more punchable face, Nick Nurse or Bruce Arians?
Oh. See, Bruce Arians wears that Kangol cap, and I know a lot of people in the Boston area wear them. I've never understood it. It looks too much like a beret. I know it's not. You're not selling any newspapers, so I'd have to say Bruce Arians.
The correct answer is yes. What's the worst tourist trap, Plymouth Rock or the Seattle Public Market?
I actually kind of like the Seattle Public Market. Plymouth Rock, because it's in the middle of nowhere. Like Plymouth,
it's a rock.
It's on the waterfront.
It's a rock
on a waterfront, and it's like underneath. Now, the last time I went there, so it's like just down like what, like 20 feet below, yep. And it's this rock. Who knows if it's actually the rock?
Spoiler: it's not.
It's not. I'll take the Seattle Public Market.
Does New England win the AFC East?
Yes.
Does Seattle win the NFC West?
Yes.
Have you seen Ben Volen's mittens?
No, I have not. Expand. I don't even know what that means.
No, Ben Volen is it's running joke.
I know who Ben Volen is. Trolling Volen. I know that.
He's a mittens losing duller. He looks like who's the dude from the Simpsons? The little kid. He ate all his paste. Ben Volen eats all his paste. And he also loses his mittens along with his credibility at every turn.
No comment.
Okay, fair enough. Finally, my co-host Dave doesn't do predictions, but Dave's not here. Any predictions for the flight, Clubber?
I like that. Hey, woman, why don't you come out? Come home with me tonight. Find yourself a real man. I'm still going back and forth on this one. Something feels like this feels like another Belichick classic, doesn't it? This feels to me sort of like that game against the Texans on that Thursday night in week.
The Jacoby Brissett game.
Yeah. But I just don't see. I feel like if Seattle establishes the run, I think that New England's going to have issues. I don't think they were really challenged by the Miami whatever's going on offense. Like I like Brian Flores. I think that they're going in the right direction there, but I couldn't name one of their running backs. I thought that once Devontae Parker left that game, their offense was just so unbelievably one-dimensional. And I feel like New England's going to have to score on every single drive that they move the football down the field. And something tells me that won't happen, given that you got N'Keal Harry fumbling balls out of the end zone. So I'm going to take Seattle in the close one. I think it ends up 21.
All right. Paul Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. You can find him on Twitter at Gallant Says. Paul, thank you very much for coming on. You filled Dave's shoes very ably.
This was a blast, and let's do it again.
Awesome, man. You have a good one.
Thanks, you too.
All right, take care.